Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.
This is Sound and Vision from KEXP and Emily Fox. Seattle native Duff McKagan is best known for being the bassist of Guns N' Roses. Welcome to the jungle. We got fun and games.
Oh, sweet child of mine.
He also had brief stints playing with Jane's Addiction and Alice in Chains. He played in a lot of bands in Seattle, starting from when he was 13 years old.
I played drums in the Fastbacks on the first single. We had a band called The Veins, and we opened for Black Flag in 1979 at the Washington Hall. It's my first gig.
He was also in a band called The Living, which has been called Seattle's greatest lost band. And he played in 10 Minute Warning, which was very influential to groups like Green River and Mudhoney, which went on to create Seattle's grunge sound. McKagan is now out with his third solo album. It's called Lighthouse.
Won't you be my lighthouse? Give me sight and lead me home.
The day after he returned from a six-month world tour playing for Iggy Pop, I caught up with McKagan to talk about his new solo record. During the conversation, McKagan also shared his story of addiction, recovery, and his struggles with panic attacks. But first, he talked about why he left Seattle for L.A. when he was 19.
I had decided to make a move, and it was 1984, and to go to Hollywood. So my time in Seattle was up. But I mean, I didn't move from Seattle because there wasn't great musicians. Honestly, truthfully, a bunch of heroin had come in Seattle in about 83 and really took out all the people I was playing with and my girlfriend and all that and my roommate. And I was just like me, the last man standing. So it's kind of get out now. It felt like to me.
I was reading a little bit of your autobiography and it was interesting to learn about the timing of that move to LA and you talking about how heroin and drugs were moving into Seattle. But also what you were super open about in your autobiography was your struggles with panic attacks and how when you were 16, you had one. And that also kind of led you to not do drugs. You said you're very open about, you know, I definitely fell into alcohol, but I didn't want to do drugs after that panic attack. Can you talk about that moment and that switch for you and also just what that panic attack felt like?
Yeah. Well, okay. So a couple caveats there. When I was young and in Seattle, it was just a thing. And I think it was my age group because I talked to other people my age. They're like, oh yeah, I did cannabinol in the seventh grade too. You know, which is like horse tranquilizer. Did LSD in the sixth grade, you know. This is very young. Picked mushrooms on the way to school. We knew what Liberty Caps were. So by the time I'm 16, I'd had a lot of experience in psychedelics and cocaine and a horse tranquilizer and Valium. And so I really thought the panic attack that I had was a cause of the psychedelics, which it's not. But when you're having a panic attack and you have that first one, you're taken to the ER for and put on Valium and you're scared, you know. I just thought I was going to have one of these acid trips that lasted the rest of my life. Couldn't breathe, you know. The world shrank. The shower I was in at my mom's fell 3 feet. So I thought there was an earthquake, literally. And I come crawling out of the shower and I realized nothing had moved. And can't breathe. And so I stopped everything. I was like basically scared straight. I started to drink probably at 18. Like I found that if I had a panic attack and I had a couple beers, at 18, it was pretty innocent. I had a couple beers. It would really kind of dampen it down. I found a little secret. And later in my 20s, I did start I the panic attacks got more and more and worse and worse. The thing is, when you drink more, you got more sugar in your system. I started later, 22, like doing drugs. But panic attacks didn't go away when I got sober. I did get sober at 30. They were huge in my 20s because I was drinking so much and doing drugs, so they just get worse. So I was chasing my tail, with this self-medicating thing. So at 30, it took me being my pancreas bursting and for me to get it. And I got it. But then how do I deal with panic attacks now? I tried some things. They put me on, the Lexapro and that thing and this and that. And none of it just made me feel awful and sluggish and like, oh, I can't do this. And I got into martial arts really soon after I got sober, and very intense martial arts, mind, body, spirit stuff. And I wanted what my sensei had. I could see it in his eyes. It was this calm and this clarity and this knowledge. And I just basically followed him around, went to the dojo 2 times a day. My band wasn't doing anything at the time, so I just threw everything at it. I started reading. Like, that's when I'm like, I got to read this Hemingway guy. Let's read. So I read everything by Hemingway, Upton Sinclair. I read Oil and The Jungle. And I read like the American classics, if you will. And that led me into reading about history. And so I was doing martial arts and reading and filling my head full of things. And I'd have panic attacks, but now I had meditation. I had these things to come out of it with. But I still deal with it.
How often do they happen now?
I haven't had a panic attack for probably a month, which is great. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. Maybe once a month. And if it can be just once a month, I'm good. But I got acoustic guitar upstairs in our house and downstairs in our house, sitting on stands. And I go to that acoustic guitar and I can play and write a song my way out of a panic attack. And that's what happened with This Is the Song. I mean, the lyrics are, this is the song that's going to save my life as I scrape for sanity.
This is the song that's going to save my life as I scrape for sanity. Tried Lexapro and what else, I don't know, but still they can't agree.
And I was sitting there and the song just came out and my panic attack started waning. And I was sweaty. I didn't have a shirt on because I'd sweated through the shirt. But this song comes out, and I have a studio now here in Seattle. And the next day, I went and recorded that song, not knowing if it was just therapy or if it was a good song or not. I had a bunch of songs written, not only Lighthouse record, but I have a bunch more. I have about 4 records worth. And so you got to start getting the music out. Somehow there's so much of it and I have more to record, so we decided to put out an EP last May and put This Is the Song. It was Mental Health Awareness Week and a month in May, and we put it out. A couple other songs. I got a song on there with Shayna Shepherd. She's a local.
Open the door to your home. And when this moment is won and the fear is gone, you know you're not alone. Alone, alone, come on.
She's amazing. But I'd written a column for the Seattle Weekly. I was a columnist there for 5 years, Emily, like in the 2006 through 2011, whatever it was. But when I did one on mental health and panic attacks and depression and talking from knowledge, and then blah, blah, blah. And it was the most popular column I'd ever had. Like, as far as like, I guess comments is how they would judge how big the column was. There wasn't likes then and all that stuff. But what I learned from that is such a broad topic that people are maybe afraid to put their hand up and go, hey, hey, and to put my hand up and go, I'm here, you're not alone, at least we got each other. you know? And that's really all that song was meant to do.
This is the song.
You also had mentioned your sensei earlier in the conversation. I understand that your sensei inspired the song Long Feather. Can you talk about that track?
Well, Long Feather is just this rock song I came up. They all start with a riff, you know, and then a melody will hit, and I had Long Feather. Oh, Long Feather, it's home.
Long Feather.
And I instantly knew Long Feather was my sensei is a Blackfoot Native American, you know. So a lot of the stuff that I learned through him was there was some Native American thought processes. And one of them is today is a good day to die. He would say that to me. I'm in my first 6-8 months year of sobriety. I'm like, you know, we go through all this other amazing stuff, and then at the end, today's a good day to die. I'm like, that's morbid. What, you know, I wouldn't say that to him. It was always yes sensei or no sensei there. You know, still to this day, it's yes sensei. It's not a conversation. And he had asked me to do these other things too. Like, have you done damage to people? Is your house clean? Clean your house. Is your body clean? Take a shower, brush your teeth. Look in the mirror in the morning and smile. And then, okay, I want to clean my house. I can do that. And I did start making calls even before he'd asked me to, and meeting with people like, hey, did I? And, you know, that's what they do in AA. I wasn't in AA, but it's all universal. These are universal truths, you know. So this was my AA. But the smiling at myself in the mirror, I mean, that's goofy. I live by myself. Who's going to? And there was one day I woke up in the morning, and I made all the calls back. I did all the stuff. My house was clean. I was healthy. I drank water the day before and ate clean, you know, food. I nourished myself. I made my bed in the morning. You know, I never did that before. And I brushed my teeth and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I was so relieved. Like, I had nothing. There was nothing on my chest or on my shoulders. And there was nothing, Emily. And I looked in the mirror, and I'm like, this is what he's talking about. And I smiled. I could look myself in the eyes. And today's a good day to die suddenly hit me. It is. You do it daily. Tell people that you love them. Tell people that you care for, you care for them. Take care of your stuff that's in front of you, and don't leave something else for another day. Take care of it. Do all that you can do. And if that is the way you live your life, so if it is today, it's my day to die. It's a good day because everything is taking. So it's really a way to live. It's not a way to die. And so that song, although it's couched in the history of General Custer and, you know, Manifest Destiny and all this stuff that I am a history nerd, you know, but it really, the underlying theme is live your life to its fullest.
I've been speaking with Duff McKagan about his new solo record called Lighthouse. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Emily.
Overwhelmed with their destiny.
with Sound and Vision. Please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast, and consider giving a one-time $20 donation to help support this show at kexp.org/sound. Thanks for listening.